So, Berto, you're from another country other than the United States that's south of the border, right?
Depends which way you're facing, but yeah.
And you know enough about the country to be able to talk about whether or not there are a lot of therapists and counselors and psychiatrists. Your dad is a psychiatrist, right?
Right.
So I know there's at least one psychiatrist in Colombia. But listener Ricardo wrote in and wants to talk about how there aren't enough counselors in some countries.
Oh, really? Like so, a shortage of counseling in different countries.
Well, I guess we'll look into that. But first, let's introduce the podcast. This is the Psychology in Seattle podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kirk Honda. I'm a therapist and I'm also a professor.
My name is Humberto Castañeda and I am a projectionist.
This is a email from listener Ricardo. He says, I live in Central America in a country where there's a lot of stigma around mental health issues. Usually professionals in the area are not that professional or competent at mental health. There's a very prevalent tendency to label everything as a depression or they go straight into medication. No one does real therapy or cares enough to really figure out what's going on. This is frustrating to me. The reason I stumbled across your podcast is because of this lack of understanding. And it has led me to do my own research to find ways to better understand myself. I find comfort in knowing that there are people out there, such as yourself, who understand and seem interested in helping. Unfortunately for me, they all seem to be in other countries. I had to look for therapy outside of my country to get proper therapy. Berto, what do you think?
That's interesting. You know, I remember as a kid, my dad was always very frustrated because I remember he would rail against a lot of the pseudo science or the pseudo therapy, or because there were a lot of homeopathy shops around, and there were, I think, a lot of like new agey kind of things. Latin America being very religious focused, there was also a lot of superstition. So, you know, a lot of ghost stories and witch stories and a lot of things about the mystical. So I think I remember him always being frustrated, almost to the point of feeling like a minority, you know, because he was actually like a trained doctor and he, you know, he had studied a science of mental stuff, whereas there were a lot of charlatans. And I remember him saying, you know, because we had relatives that would go to these places. And whenever they would visit after they left, he'd be like, oh, I can't stand it. They're just, you know, talking about these things like they're real, but they're not real. And so it must have been frustrating. I don't know how it is nowadays, but I imagine that there's still a legacy of that sort of folksy treatments and, you know, things not based on real science.
Yeah, and conceptualizations of things differently than we would in the States. Like if someone was psychotic, for instance, and delusional, they might have a different explanation than an organic brain disorder, right?
That's true. And you know, at the
same... And of course, I just want to say Central America is different from Colombia.
Sure.
But close enough in terms of different than the United States in all likelihood, right?
Yeah, I think probably in a lot of those countries, meaning sort of the poorer American countries, I think that there's a big schism between people with money and people without money, right? And people with money tend to have better education. They tend to be surrounded by people with better education. I remember most of the country was and is still rural, the rural juror. And it is therefore not as, you know, advanced in these matters. But I will say that in the big cities, especially like Bogota, which is where I'm from, in some ways there is more professionalism than sometimes I see even here.
Yeah.
But that's a minority area and a minority of people.
Right.
I think a lot of the country is poor and not as well informed and more susceptible to pseudo stuff.
But in Bogota, correct me if I'm wrong, they don't have as the same idea about mental health and receiving counseling services as you would in Seattle, right?
You know, I don't know nowadays. I remember that my impression growing up was certainly that normal people don't need mental health stuff.
Right. So now that's the same United States.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not as if the United States is where it should be in terms of not having stigma. But from my impression, Colombia and other countries in Central and South America have a greater stigma. Although I think in Argentina, the stigma is much less. So there's pockets, I think. But anyway, people email me about this all the time because as a podcaster, this goes out to everyone in the world. And so people will contact me and often say this, that, and they'll actually ask. I just got another email from another person today asking to hire me as their therapist, and they live in a different country.
Yeah.
And ethically speaking and practically speaking, it's just not possible for me to do that. And I always feel bad because if they lived in so some people in Seattle will contact me. My practice is currently too busy and to accept any new people. And so when I tell someone in Seattle, I'm sorry, my practice is closed, I know I can give them 20 names of people that I know personally that will be great for them. But someone in, for instance, Central America, I don't know what to say.
Right.
You know, basically, I just have to say, I'm really sorry, I can't do anything, because they'll ask me for help. And I say, I'm sorry, I can't be your clinician. And I don't even know how to find clinicians in your area. This isn't to say that there aren't directories. I'm guessing that there are.
You know, I mean, if you compare it to Seattle, there's no question. As I said, it's a very superstitious culture. So there's a lot of religion involved in things. So people will just as soon literally bring you some rosary or something and be like, you know, I prayed to this thing and it helped me. Or just climb, you know, in Bogota, there's this mountain, Mount Monserrate, and there's this little crucifix at the top. And so it's like, oh, climb Monserrate and say some prayers. I'm telling you, it does wonders, you know, stuff like that.
How long does it take to climb that mountain?
It's quite a hike. I mean, you're already at altitude when you start, you know, 9,000 feet. I think by
is
the time
Bogota 9,000 feet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a hike. It's hard. Yeah. Some people can't make it. But anyways,
is it like a day or is it like 10 days?
No. It's not like Mount Rainier. It's within a day. You do it.
You go up and down.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's quite difficult.
Yeah.
My general point is that the more as a kid, I climbed up.
Did it fix anything?
Yeah, sure. No, not at all.
Oh.
It's because I didn't know at the time. If I had known, it would have fixed it.
It fixed a problem that you didn't know about.
Yeah.
Probably.
So in general, I think, yes, there's more superstition. Now, when you compare it against the entirety of the U.S., then I start being not so sure, because I've been in more recent years disappointed with the level of sophistication in parts of this country as well.
Yeah, what I'll say to listener Ricardo is, yeah, it sucks, and I feel really bad for you. Let's just go into some statistics here before going into some advice. So I gathered some census statistics from Mexico and from the United States. I couldn't find any from Central America or from Colombia, but I did find from Mexico. And again, not to lump everything in together in the same, but just to provide some contrast. So in the United States, how many clinicians of various different professions are there per 100,000 people in the United States?
Oh, wow. Okay. I'd say for 100,000, for every 100 people, there's one. So 1,000.
A thousand clinicians per every
100,000. Yeah.
It's actually much less than that. It's about 10% of that. It's 158. Yeah.
Really? Actually, that's few.
Yeah, it's not that many. Yeah. But to put it in perspective, there are about there's about 20. There's about 240 physicians, you know, physical doctors per 100,000 people. So there's about half the amount of counselors, psychologists, social workers as there are.
It's not as bad when you think of it.
Physicians,
way.
Right. So, and you wouldn't say there's like a physician shortage in the United States, right. You know.
I guess it only sounds bad if you thought everyone needs to see a doctor stat. Then right. You run into a problem.
Right. And I'm a bit surprised because that I would have thought there were much less counselors, psychologists
than doctors
than there were physicians. Mm-hmm. I would have thought that it would be like 1%, but it's about 60 to 70%, which I think is really great. So in Mexico, how many clinical people are there per 100,000 people? So United States, there's 158. What do you think in Mexico?
70, no, 50 per.
So according to a rough guess that I found, there's 3.
What?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Right. So because it's kind of hard to figure out, I don't really know the different professional labels that they have in Mexico, but I do know there are 3 psychiatrists per 100,000. Whereas the United States, there's 10. So the United States has more than 3 times the amount of psychiatrists per person. But when it comes to other kinds of mental health professionals, social workers, counselors, there's 0.2 social worker types per 100,000 people.
Oh, man.
As compared to just marriage and family therapists, there's 8 per 100,000. So there's basically, you know, hardly any counselor types and mostly psychiatrists, and there's still not probably enough psychiatrists. Because I have a hard time believing that Mexicans have a drastically, you know, lesser rate of mental illness, you know, like schizophrenia or ADHD or something. And so now I know there are statistics regarding that, but at any rate. So just to run down the different professions, the what do you think the most? So there are different professions. There's substance abuse counselors, there's social workers, there's mental health counselors, there's psychologists, there's marriage and family therapists, and there's psychiatrists. Which ones do you think are the most numerous in the United States?
Psychologists?
No, they're third.
What? Okay. So just therapists then.
What kind of therapist? So you got social workers, mental health counselors, and marriage.
Mental health counselors.
They're number 4.
What? Yeah. Okay.
So the most numerous is psychiatrists because.
Oh, really?
When you break out the different professions, psychiatrists, they're the only medical doctors.
I see.
So they're the only ones who can prescribe medication, and so there needs to be a lot of them.
Okay.
But if you add up all the other clinicians, they far outweigh the number of psychiatrists, if that makes sense.
I see.
So psychiatrists, there's 34,000 in the United States. Social workers, which include, oh, wait a second. I have this all wrong. Psychiatrists are not the most numerous. I had this list backwards. You're actually right. Psychologists are the most numerous.
Oh.
At 43 per 100,000.
Oh.
And again, it compared that to 3 psychiatrists per 100,000 in Mexico. So you're right. Psychologists, number 1. And then number 2, we have social workers doing mental health or substance abuse.
Cool.
And then number 3, we have counselors, which you identified as pretty high up there. Number 4, we have substance abuse counselors. Number 5, we have psychiatrists. And number 6, we have marriage and family therapists.
I was surprised about psychiatrists because that takes so long.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, I had a justification for it in my mind, apparently, because I said it, but then it wasn't true. Yeah. Anyway, so here's some solutions that we can all do. I personally contribute to Doctors Without Borders, and they actually fund mental health services to people all over the world. So if you're worried about people in other countries, you can contribute to Doctors Without Borders and know that at least part of it's going to mental health. But that probably doesn't address people's ongoing therapy needs, because I'm guessing that Doctors Without Borders doesn't provide, you know, weekly therapy. That's just a guess of mine. I don't know. But I'm also guessing that as online therapy becomes more prevalent, more people will get the services that they need. I've done some episodes on Talkspace, which I'm fairly certain provides services to people all over the world. it's that costs something, which, you know, might be harder for people in poor areas, but I wonder if they'll actually start providing some pro bono services. It seems like something that they might do. But honestly, what I would do if I was listener Ricardo and I could not find a counselor in my area is I would do what he's already doing. He's trying to help himself.
Yeah.
He's trying to figure out, because you can definitely help yourself without ever going to a counselor. I myself have strove to better myself, to reduce my own suffering, to reduce my own anxiety about things, to improve my mood, to improve my energy, and all those kinds of things. And I would say 10% of that involved actually going to therapy. Other kinds of things are depending on the issue, because, you know, if you have schizophrenia, there's not a lot of self-help books out there that are going to help you. But if it's depression, anxiety, or trauma, or this kind of thing, you can do a lot for yourself by getting good sleep, exercise, and a diet.
Right.
A lot of things can be at least mitigated by that. You can educate yourself, as listener Ricardo is doing, by listening to this podcast, which is an excellent podcast to listen to, I must say.
Because if it doesn't drive you nuts, then it cures you.
Yeah, it kill fire with fire. Also, I mean, for myself, a major part of my own recovery from anxiety was educating myself about what anxiety is. Mm. What's the physiological underpinnings? What's the research? What are other people doing? Also, getting support. Join a subreddit. There are active communities on Reddit for all of these things, anxiety, depression, whatever you want to talk about.
Join 4chan.
That's right. Also, talk with other people. Again, maybe online. You want to get support. That doesn't, you know, presumably cost anything. Also, you want to build quality relationships with other people. This is a key element in any mental health issue and can also correct for relational trauma issues. Also, think about what thoughts and behaviors can be changed that will help whatever sort of goal you're working on. So you want to think, you want to become aware of what your mind does and the consequences of having certain kind of thought patterns and behaviors. When I involve myself with that particular friend, I feel terrible afterwards. You know, I should start thinking about that.
Right.
Also, just reading self-help books. Self-help books get a bad rap, but honestly, I've never come across a self-help book that I thought was just like utterly terrible for you. You could probably find many self-help books that are probably worthless, but you're not going to find a lot of self-help books. And there are some, but you're not going to find a lot that are actually damaging to you. And at the very least, it just gives you something to think about. And there's things online, you know, that you can read.
Is it healthy to make a cardboard cutout of yourself and talk to yourself for a few hours while on the couch?
Actually, it's not of yourself, but of a therapist. You know, you could get a cardboard cutout of me. There's pictures of me online and just put a cardigan on me. And
and then do you run behind the cardboard cutout, cut the lips and put your lips through it and talk like you're you? And does that help?
I feel like we're going down kind of a sexual road of some kind. I smell the beginnings. Okay. The last thing I'll say is we all need to do what we can to reduce stigma regarding any kind of mental health issue or the need for counseling. Because the other thing is here, I'm not just talking about diagnoses, because a lot of counseling involves things like just getting support about what you're going through in life and has nothing to do with a mental illness. I would say all of my clients currently, mostly what we're talking about has nothing to do with a mental disorder.
Right.
It's because, you know, it's things like marriage problems, parenting problems.
And like coping with life.
Job problems. Yeah. What do I do with the next step in my life problems? That kind of stuff. So anyway, but we all need to do what we can to reduce the stigma of mental illness and of just wanting help and talking to a counselor, because this will help people to step forward, because you know in these areas in Mexico and Central America, Colombia, there are people that want to talk to someone, or they would benefit by talking to someone, but stigma is either keeping them in denial or keeping them from actually reaching out. And so if we reduce that stigma, which we've been trying to do on this podcast, you can, I mean, our little part of it, people will start stepping forward, then a market starts to grow, and then people start saying, hey, there's money to be made in this, and then you have more and more counselors getting trained, and an industry is born. I mean, there was a time in the United States when there were zero counselors and zero psychiatrists, zero psychologists. The reason why we have a market is because of small incremental cultural and industry and governmental and institutional and educational changes that slowly build an industry. And every society is capable of doing those same things.
Would it help if we tattooed all these people with like tattoos of broken brains that were very visible? So when people see them walking down the streets, they could be like, oh, you need help mentally. Let me not stigmatize you.
Yeah, you joke, but honestly, that would, it's absurd, but it would help because everyone would be walking around with a tattoo.
That's true.
So, okay, so we're at the end of the episode, but I'm going to say start, and then I'm gonna, and then you say stop, and whoever I stop on is gonna get some swag. So, patrons, so go. We're scrolling.
Stop.
Okay, Juliet. Juliet, where is she? Quebec?
Oh, Juliet. Quebecois.
Yeah. So Juliet, you will be getting some swag in the mail. Berto, any final thoughts on this issue here?
Well, you've opened my mind that I didn't even think about the fact that it might be harder to get the help you need depending where you live. I sort of take Seattle for granted sometimes when it comes to that.
Yeah, in some ways, Seattle is one of the most saturated societies with counselors. In fact, when I advise recent grads when they want to start a private practice, I will always tell them, you might want to consider opening up a practice outside of Seattle because in some ways there's too many therapists in Seattle. And just outside of Seattle, like in Bellevue, Issaquah, Everett, these areas, there's not as much per capita. And so you have an easier time growing a practice. But you have to live in Bellevue or Everett, or you know what I mean, or commute.
These backwater places,
or commute there. You know what I mean, which are is not always pleasant. But I know people who do that. I a colleague of mine actually lives in Seattle, and she commutes to her office in Issaquah, and she really likes it. So
maybe move to San Francisco to save on rent.
Yeah. And that's another society that is saturated. All right. Well, that does it for that episode of Psychology in Seattle. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for writing in, listener Ricardo. Keep us updated on your situation. And take care of yourself, because
you deserve it.